listening to Fakeologist Audio Chat. To connect to our always-on and always-streaming audio chat, go to audiochat.fakeologist.com. This is a new and exciting way to communicate with fellow fakeologists around the globe. Each day we compress and post the day's audio into a file that can be big or small. Discover new voices and ideas that talk about media fakery like you never did before. To listen to the live stream, go to s3.fakeologist.com. Now, on with the audio chat.
Two, two, one, two. Okay, we're in the live stream. I've had a wonderful piece of work by Kahan. Kahan, the best thing to do, get rid of space aliens or aliens, is, I think, in my own mind, what I do is I play Space Invaders. But then I cook a good meal. The fun part is when you cook a good meal, because our Prime Minister, he crunched a big crunch on a that was on a brown onion. That's the guy that rules over us. Okay, let me just make that perfectly clear. Our Prime Minister, Tony Abbott, crunched into a brown onion. You look that up. That's the idiot rules over us. I think I can't remember the point of what your little thing. You just fucking stop. Nothing is knowable. You might as well entertain the whole ideas. So you've got a bit of an issue with Daniel. Our paradigm. Our aliens. Yes. There's no back into it. There's no proof to it. There's no circular reason. Round and round and round. Yeah. I'm with you. Where are you going with this? It's always fun. It's always fun with you. Yeah, help her out. Where would you go? That's not where I would go, she says. Why can't Ham give up aliens? Nuclear bombs. A whole bunch of nuclear bombs and maybe might as well stick the mic. Well, basically all I want to say is, hello, hey Kahan, can you hear this? Kahan, can you hear this? I love you, sweetheart, and you know what? Everyone is not going to put this to air. And I wonder why I get blocked off from the live stream.
Microphone activated.
September 11th, and everybody remembers where they were, what they were doing, and everything, so on and so forth. And since mm-hmm. then, there's gotten to be a lot of conspiracy theories. The feelings about what happened have completely changed. So we bring in a couple of experts with opposing viewpoints. See how this works out. All right, joined on the show right now by a couple of gentlemen, both very distinguished in their credentials and stuff, and opposing viewpoints to some degree and to a large degree on a big issue of our time, of course, September 11th, and what happened on that day, not necessarily what happened, but why it happened and how it happened. Let us welcome first Dr. James H. Fetzer, Distinguished McKnight University Professor Emeritus, University of Minnesota Duluth. Welcome, Dr. Fetzer. How are you?
Hey, great. My pleasure to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Dr. Fetzer has been on with us before. Amazon.com, you can find a bunch of his books. And then also let us welcome Dr. Michael Shermer, Editor-in-Chief of Skeptic Magazine. That's www.skeptic.com. Dr. Shermer's latest book, Why Darwin Matters, The Case Against Intelligent Design. That can be purchased at skeptic.com. Lots of stuff. Dr. Shermer, welcome as well.
Good morning.
Now, guys, we'll be the first to tell you right up front, we're not smart enough to have this debate on our own. We could throw in things that would not be well-researched and stuff, so that's why we wanted to have you guys on. And obviously, I'm guessing you guys have bumped into each other before. Thank you both for joining us, and we're very interested in this. This is something that I know the three of us have been fascinated by, and a lot of listeners are fascinated by it as well.
Well, it's interesting, although Shermer and I have very different views about 9/11, and interestingly, JFK as well. I've just published a book of my own that involves a critique of intelligent design creationism, creation science, and so forth, which is entitled Render Unto Darwin. So we have areas of overlap apart from those we'll be discussing today.
And that's available on Amazon.com as well?
Yeah.
And that was called Render Under Darwin?
Unto Darwin. Unto Darwin, yes.
All right. Dr. Fetzer, how we were thinking is we'll kind of let you kind of explain your version of it and then sort of let Dr. Shermer respond to that. Would that be okay with you?
Sure, that's fine with me.
Well, let us start with the very basics. We'll kind of go sort of in chronological order, and I'm sure we'll jump around a little bit. But let's start with, everybody, I think, agrees that would agree that the planes did hit the buildings on September 11th. But after that, that's where things start to differentiate. Dr. Fetzer, let me start with you and have you discuss what actually happened to bring those buildings down. I know that's a broad question.
Well, the buildings were of a very sophisticated design with 47 core columns and 230 external columns. Frank DeMartini, who was a project manager, explained that they had a very sophisticated load redistribution capability. They were designed to withstand the impact.
6 years ago today, September 11th, and everybody remembers where they were, what they were doing, and everything, so on and so forth. And since then, there's gotten to be a lot of conspiracy theories. The feelings about what happened have completely changed. So we bring in a couple of experts with opposing viewpoints. See how this works out. All right, joined on the show right now by a couple of gentlemen, both very distinguished in their credentials and stuff, and opposing viewpoints to some degree and to a large degree on a big issue of our time, of course, September 11th, and what happened on that day, not necessarily what happened, but why it happened and how it happened. Let us welcome first Dr. James H. Fetzer, distinguished McKnight University professor emeritus, University of Minnesota Duluth. Welcome, Dr. Fetzer. How are you?
Hey, great. My pleasure to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Dr. Fetzer has been on with us before. Amazon.com, you can find a bunch of his books. And then also let us welcome Dr. Michael Shermer, editor-in-chief of Skeptic Magazine. That's www.skeptic.com. Dr. Shermer's latest book, Why Darwin Matters, The Case Against Intelligent Design. That can be purchased at skeptic.com. Lots of stuff. Dr. Shermer, welcome as well.
Good morning.
Guys, we'll be the first to tell you right up front, we're not smart enough to have this debate on our own. We could throw in things that would not be well-researched and stuff, so that's why we wanted to have you guys on. And obviously, I'm guessing you guys have bumped into each other before. Thank you both for joining us, and we're very interested in this. This is something that I know the three of us have been fascinated by, and a lot of listeners are fascinated by it as well.
Well, it's interesting, although Shermer and I have very different views about 9/11, and interestingly, JFK as well. I've just published a book of my own that involves a critique of intelligent design, creationism, creation science, and so forth, which is entitled Render Unto Darwin. So we have areas of overlap apart from those we'll be discussing today.
And that's available on Amazon.com as well?
Yeah.
And that was called Render Under Darwin?
Unto Darwin. Unto Darwin, yes.
All right. Dr. Fetzer, how we were thinking is we'll kind of let you kind of explain your version of it and then sort of let Dr. Shermer respond to that. Would that be okay with you?
Sure, that's fine with me.
Well, let us start with the very basics. We'll kind of go sort of in chronological order, and I'm sure we'll jump around a little bit. But let's start with, everybody, I think, agrees that would agree that the planes did hit the buildings on September 11th. But after that, that's where things start to differentiate. Dr. Fetzer, let me start with you and have you discuss what actually happened to bring those buildings down. I know that's a broad question.
Well, the buildings were of a very sophisticated design with 47 core columns and 230 external columns. Frank DeMartini, who was a project manager, explained that they had a very sophisticated load redistribution capability. They were designed to withstand the impact of the then largest commercial airliners, which were Boeing 707s, very similar in their mass and fuel capacity and so forth to the 767s, and that the impact might cause some very local damage, but no general structural damage. I've discovered three other engineers who've said the same thing. In fact, DeMartini likened the impact of aircraft on those buildings to sticking a pencil through mosquito netting.
Okay, Dr. Shermer, when you hear that, obviously, as not engineers or anything, and we haven't done the research, we have to take it at fact. What are your thoughts on the same topic?
On why the buildings fell? Well, there's been numerous reports on this, and the damage that was done to it by the impact of the planes caused structural integrity loss. It doesn't have to completely melt the steel. It just only has to weaken it to where the bolts on the floor trusses that are holding the beams to the side walls, you only need a few of those to snap, which they could easily do under the weight of the floors above where the planes impacted. And in any case, the forensic evidence from the investigation by the engineers afterwards found, evidence that would support what they say happened, and they didn't find any positive evidence that there was intentional demolition going on. You would find, for example, pieces of the thousands of little bombs that would have had to been planted, explosive devices that would have had to be planted. So most of these arguments on 9/11, I find, have to do with where there appears to be a gap or anomaly. In other words, it's based on negative evidence associated with the prevailing theory and no positive evidence associated with the challenging theory.
But I hope that Shermer knows more about intelligent design than he does about these buildings. The steel
yeah.
doesn't melt until 2,800 degrees. The highest temperature you can attain with a jet-based fuel fire is 1,800 degrees,
uh-huh.
and that's under optimal condition. In fact, Underwriters
Laboratory certified the steel. But it doesn't have to melt. It only has to weaken.
Certified the steel up to 2,000 degrees for 3 to 4 hours without any adverse effects at all.
So wait a minute, Jim, you're saying that...
NIST, incidentally, examined 236 samples of steel, which they themselves had selected, and discovered 233 had not been exposed to temperatures above 500 degrees Fahrenheit, and the other three not to temperatures above 1,200 degrees. John Skilling, who was the partner in the engineering firm that built the towers, said they were designed to support 2,000% their expected live load. That's 20 times more than carrying capacity. The fires didn't burn long enough or hot enough to cause the steel to weaken, much less melt.
Oh.
And if it had caused the steel to weaken like 50%, as people like Shermer will claim, you had a 20 times carrying capacity, you'd still be able to sustain 10 times more than was being imposed upon it. Moreover, below the 80th floor on the South Tower and the 96th on the North Tower, you have stone-cold steel. Would anyone imagine in their wildest dreams, even Michael Shermer, that if a plane hit the top of the Eiffel Tower or a fire broke out, that the Eiffel Tower would collapse? And yet, although they didn't look like it because they were square, their design or engineering features, the Twin Towers were very similar to the Eiffel Tower. The steel at the base was 4 to 5 inches thick, tapering off to a quarter inch at the top.
Now, Jim, so what you're saying is, I mean, I get what you're saying, but what about all the, with the planes coming in and doing the damage that they did, wouldn't that kind of change that whole equation of...
As I said, the buildings were designed to withstand the impact of those planes. In fact, DeMartini and others have said they thought they could withstand the impact of multiple airplane crashes. There was a very modest damage done to the core columns, which are the key support feature in the North Tower. NIST, I think, suggested 4 to 6 might have been damaged on the South Tower, even though the plane hit the corner. And there's no reason to think it would have done substantial damage to the core column. NIST claimed 8 or 10 core columns had been damaged there. Still not enough.
Okay.
Here's something terribly important to understand. In 1975, in February, history performed an experiment for us. It was an enormous fire on the 11th floor. It enveloped the core, some 60% of the floor, at 2,000 degrees for 3 to 4 hours, and yet none of the steel had to be replaced.
Doctor, that's the voice of Dr. James H. Fetzer, of course, University of Minnesota Duluth. Dr. Michael Shermer, editor-in-chief of Skeptic Magazine, you present that the opposing viewpoint. What about the 1975 fire? What about, because the crux of the argument as to why the towers fell or not when it comes to the steel melting and stuff, that seems to be where it all comes back to, that the fires from the engines and everything else couldn't have been hot enough to melt that steel. Dr. Shermer, what do you say for that?
You can go to skeptic.com and just Google in there 9/11, and we have a whole report on this, from which I'll just read one sentence. Best engineering estimates tell us that steel loses 50% of its strength at 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit and as much as 90% of its strength at about 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit. So it doesn't have to burn at 2,800 degrees in order for the steel to lose.
Yeah, but notice Shermer's not listening to the points I made. NIST's own study of 236 samples of steel showed 233 had not been exposed to temperatures above 500 degrees.
Yeah, but
only three had been exposed
to
temperatures
as high
as 1,200
degrees. The
building was over-designed to carry 20 times its expected carrying capacity. Even if you cut that in half, it's still carrying 10%. The longer fires burn, the more mass is being converted into energy, and there's less and less it has to support. The whole government account of these buildings and the claim of a collapse, which is even inconsistent with what we observe, because these buildings are actually being pulverized, turned into very fine dust, in about 10 seconds apiece, which is absolutely astounding, is contradicted by all of the evidence. In fact, it isn't even physically possible, because for it to occur the way the government claims, it would violate laws of physics and engineering.
Dr. Fetzer, let me ask you this, because one of the claims that happens so often is about the building falling too fast and everything. And I'm not an expert, but my wife is a structural engineer, so this is kind of in her wheelhouse. And one of the claims I've heard is that they have fallen too fast. But when one floor falls upon another, and now the weights and stuff, the load is being greatly extended beyond what those floors can support, it's gonna break immediately. That's from, but Joe, listen.
If you got 110 floors, okay, take the North Tower for example, 110 floors. You had the top 30 that teetered over on the South Tower, and then amazingly turned into powder. It just blew apart when it started to teeter over. That
hands up. Who wants to hear these jokers going against it? I'm talking. Why people believe weird things, pseudoscience, superstition, and other illusions. Like, I'll read the back of it again. Includes new chapters. This is Fetzer going against this guy called Shermer. And I hope this is coming out on the live stream, or I'm recording it because I'm a dickhead. But I'll play the rest of the recording. Why not?
It's really fascinating and requires a lot of explanation the government can't provide, because the only causal mechanisms the government is offering is the planes hitting the building, these fires, and most of that jet fuel burned off in the first 5 or 10 seconds. I mean, if you want a comparison, take a cup of gasoline, pour it out, and see if you can light just part of it. Can't be done. And then, of course, you had it only burned for about a half an hour in the case of the South Tower, an hour and a half in the North. And Underwriters Laboratory had certified the steel to 2,000 degrees for 3 to 4 hours without either weakening or melting.
Well, maybe they were wrong. Let's pull back for a second here.
Okay.
What you're proposing?
Maybe they were wrong. That's what I have to have for you to say, since you're placing all your whole argument on.
No. James. Where is the evidence for the explosive demolition devices? Where is it? There would have to be thousands of explosive devices planted. Where are they?
Using conventional methods.
Are you telling me that the government ran in and picked up all the debris that would convict them of this crime?
I'm not going to tell you anything, Michael. I'm going to explain that the government's account is a physically impossible.
Well, I don't care if you don't. This is exactly like the intelligent design creationists. Because you can't accept it, therefore it couldn't have happened that way. What you're proposing.
I'm not.
Just so you're quite clear, this is James Fetzer, Jim Fetzer, and Michael Shermer. And let me just read it again. Michael Shermer, PhD, is the founding publisher of Skeptic Magazine, Skeptic.com, and director of Skeptic Society, and the Skeptic Caltech, and the contributing editor of the monthly columnist for the Scientific American. He's also the author of How We Believe in the Search of God, the Age of Science, and Denying History, and The Borderlands of Science. This book is called Why People Believe Weird Things by Michael Shermer. And he dedicates it to, who is he? The guy that went to the stars, which Cahan does a excellent impression of. This is fakeologist. This is for fakeologist Carl Sagan. The memory of Carl Sagan, 1934 to 1996. Colleagues and inspiration, whose lecture on the burden of skepticism 10 years ago gave me a beacon when I was intellectually and professionally adrift. There you go. That's enough. Let's listen to these two fucking clowns go against each other again. This is this is Shermer and Fetzer.
There would have had to been 19 hijackers and the 4 planes, all run by Al Qaeda and the Bush administration in cahoots together.
We're losing both of you.
What would you like?
We've got to have some type of formatics here. When someone's on a good roll, somebody has to shut up and take it, and then the other guy, and then you fire back, okay? We understand what you're both trying to do here, but understand this. If you both talk at the same time, no one can understand you, and we have no GD audience. So effing fix it.
Dr. James Fetzer, of course, distinguished McKnight University professor emeritus, University of Minnesota Duluth. Dr. Michael Shermer, editor-in-chief, Skeptic Magazine. Dr. Shermer, I know Dr. Fetzer got to lay that out. Let us go back, because you said you wanted to peel it back. And the one argument we've heard against the conspiracy theories, actually it was called in by someone after Dr. Fetzer joined us the first time, and it was this. It was that any sort of government scandal or anything has always been exposed because there's someone who can't keep their mouth shut, up to and including Monica and Bill Lewinsky, and there were – or Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton when there were only two people involved, and yet one of them still talked. And the argument was made that if there is a conspiracy this big, someone would have talked.
This is why you should not let doctors operate on you, because that's Dr. Shermer and Dr. Fetzer, both of them doctors. You should not let a doctor anywhere near your ass unless you think these bastards know what they're talking about.
What do you say to that?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's been my argument all along. When I was on G. Gordon Liddy's radio show once talking about conspiracy theories, I asked him because, you know, he's the man.
Yeah.
And behind Watergate, and he said two reasons none of these things can be true is the competency problem and the leakage problem. People can't keep their mouth shut, and government bureaucrats are fairly incompetent. So just on this one particular issue, to bring down the World Trade Center buildings by explosive devices, you'd have to plant thousands of them, and it would take weeks or months to do. Not one person in the World Trade Center and all the security systems, particularly beefed up since they tried to blow up the buildings in 1993, not one of them saw one of these people sleuthing around inside the building. And of those hundreds or thousands of people that would have to be involved in the conspiracy, not one of them wants to go on Larry King Live and say, "Man, have I got a story for you."
Yeah,
look what happens when the Bush administration, somebody in the Bush administration retires or gets fired. Look what they do. They all come out.
All right.
People have been talking, Norman Mineta talking about Dick Cheney down in a bunker beneath the White House when an aide was coming up and saying, "Sir, it's 50 miles out, sir, it's 30 miles out, sir, it's 10 miles out. Did the order still stand?" And Cheney turned on him, really chewed him out and said, "Of course, have you heard anything to the contrary? The order had to be to not shoot down an incoming plane, because if it had been to shoot it down, by God, it would have been shot down. It wasn't shot down. Pentagon must be the most heavily defended building."
Where is Simon Schack when you need him? Where is Simon Schack when you need him? I'm looking for him right now. I've got Fetzer and Shermer. They're both here talking shit. And listen to them. Listen to them. They've been given everything. And by the way, let me just be honest about this. This was an interview with Fetzer and Shermer on the 26/11/2009. Okay, so let's just be clear about that. This isn't a live interview that I'm or anything I'm not taking part of. Yeah, 26/11/2009. Absolutely awesome book that I was given. Why people take two believe weird things. All right, we'll let him go, should we? A little bit longer.
Building in the world. There was even a C-130 pilot in the air who claimed that he saw this plane approaching the building, and yet according to pilots for 9/11 Truth, who studied the black box data provided by the government itself under the Freedom of Information Act, their reconstruction of the black box data shows the plane was 300 feet in the air when it should have been taking out those lampposts if the government account were true, and it was over 100 feet above the Pentagon when it passed over it. Then there was an explosion, which may be why some witnesses thought that the plane and the explosion were tied together.
Now, Jim, we're getting ahead of ourselves, though.
Other.
Michael was talking about the whole thing about keeping your mouth shut. Can you respond to that, to the fact that so many people would have to keep their mouth shut about the conspiracy?
A number of false remarks here, including the fact that there were odd security lapses in the Twin Towers the 2 weeks before 9/11. Sections of the building were shut down. The security apparatus was turned off. Teams of so-called engineers were allowed in the building. Marvin Bush turns out to be have been a member of the board of directors of the security outfit that was responsible for the Twin Towers and for Dulles Airport and for United Airlines, an outfit called Securicom. Wirt Walker III, a Bush cousin, was even the chief executive officer of that outfit. Barbara Bush wrote in her autobiography how Securicom's contract for the World Trade Center expired the day after 9/11. I have in the last week heard from a...
The only way you can keep Jim the cunt, and I call him a cunt, and he can sue me if that is not an opinion, because I think he is a cunt, is listen to that. You have to have him on pre-record. Listen to the cunt rabbit on. Blah, 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 blah. It's like, how much bloody cocaine has he had? Has he snorted up his nose? All right. Okay. Let's keep going.
witness who worked in the building who said he saw a couple of strange guys in the building who were doing things he thought was very curious, that he was they reported him to his boss, and he was let go. He was subsequently fired, and these guys eventually visited him and threatened him with his life if he talked about it. Now, maybe Michael Shermer wants to think about that.
Mike, it sounds like he's got your number based on what he says, if that
not really.
True.
There's still no positive evidence. It's still everything he has said is, I find anomalies in the mainstream theory, therefore I don't accept it. What we would need for this to be true is actual positive evidence. Somebody coming forth said, yes, I was one of the guys who did this, or I received orders from so-and-so to plant these demolition devices.
Right,
or,
but
our best would be actual pieces of the demolition devices from the debris. I mean, there's hundreds and thousands of people rummaging through, cleaning up the mess. Why didn't anybody find any of these explosive devices?
Dr. Fetzer, let me ask you that. Because of the fact that the 9/11 truth movement has gotten so much power, and we saw the Ohio University study that said something somewhere, and I think in the mid-30s, as far as a percentage of Americans that believe that the government was at least aware of September 11th or had some hand in of advanced knowledge, because of how vocal you have been and other people that share your line of thinking, where are those people that have come forward that would be able to be paraded out, sort of like we asked for earlier?
Okay, so as fakeologists, listen closely to this interview. Who's in on it? Like, who's in on, like, smashing, like, fakeologists will say that James Fetzer is absolutely not to be trusted. And I have got Michael Shermer's book here, and that's the guy who's not to be trusted. And I have absolutely no clue who is interviewing both of these clowns. So I guaranteed he's not to be trusted. If you are a fakeologist, you should be listening to this. Fakeologist.com. Let's keep going.
That would be on Larry King, or that would go on whatever show, and say, I saw this, I can prove it, here is the physical proof, here is the, you know, everything's photographed with digital cameras and stuff. Where is it?
Well, I'm offering you physical proof that the government's account can't possibly be true, because it would violate laws of physics and engineering. Shermer never even got off the ground about it, creating a point of initiation for the destruction of these buildings. They did not collapse. If they had collapsed, you would have had a stack of floors that would represent about 12.5% of the total height of the building. That happened with Building 7, which went down at 5:20 in the afternoon. It wasn't hit by any planes, had no jet fuel-based fires. Came down in a classic controlled demolition, complete, total, and abrupt collapse in 6.5 seconds, the rate of free fall into its own basement. Dan Rather, Peter Jennings on the scene, said this looked just like the controlled demolition of resorts and casinos in Las Vegas, and indeed it did. Now, if you look at footage, I mean, Shermer seems to ignore the obvious. We have all this footage of those buildings turning to dust. We have photographs of Manhattan covered by millions of cubic yards of very fine dust. That dust came from those buildings. The concrete, the steel, the office furniture.
Yes. So you're not mistaken, Jim Fetzer. You are a cunt. James Fetzer is a cunt. And sue me if you think that is an issue. Okay, back to the show.
The computers, the chairs, the human beings and living things were being turned into very fine dust, some extraordinarily powerful causal mechanism that the government doesn't even want to acknowledge was required. Those two buildings, there should have been like 12 to 15 floors. We have photographs taken after their collapse, before Building 7 collapsed, and it's virtually level. There's less than 3 floors of debris there. In fact, it's virtually to ground level. That those buildings were completely destroyed. Almost 80% of them was turned to dust. And as you may well recall, 1,100 bodies were not recovered at all. Not at all. The coroners, the first responders, the ambulance drivers were all baffled. Where went those 1,100 bodies? If you look at a collapse of a building in Pakistan or India after an earthquake, you can see how the bodies are mangled. They're crushed, but they exist. They are there. These buildings were turned into very fine dust. Now, that means there had to be some kind of causal mechanism being employed here. We suspect probably something that was developed in the Star Wars research program, some sort of directed energy program mechanism or device in the order of lasers or masers or plasmoids. We don't know what it was, but we do know that it required overwhelmingly more energy than the government can account for. In fact, the government, and Shermer just seems to be in denial about this, can't even bring the building to the point of initiating a collapse.
All right, Dr. Shermer, we're running short on time on this segment, but I want to give you a chance to respond to what Dr. Fetzer is saying.
Even if the government explanation is not correct, what you're suggesting is that there had to be two incredibly complex conspiracies happening at the same time in coordination between Al-Qaeda and the Bush administration, in which the 19 hijackers would have had to do everything they did, and the Bush operatives would have had to do everything they did, all timed just to perfection, and that the buildings that had to be hit just at the right place on those floors to coordinate with the planted explosive devices and so on. The fallacy of conjunction, that is, having two or complex ideas, is far more unlikely than just having one causal explanation. Why not accept that the fact that Al-Qaeda said they did it? They were proud that they did it.
Al-Qaeda.
But again, if they...
Dr. Michael Shaw, I've got this itch on the inside of my thigh, just below my ball bag. Dr. James Fetzer, I've got this itch just on the inside of my right side of my ball bag. I mean, you can, both can suck my cock. You are the both are just on the same team. You are the scum of the earth. And this is coming to you. I don't know whether I should say it because I think Ab's a little frightened of the repercussions and probably won't put this to air. But I am saying to you both, Germa and Fetzer, you should grow up.
We could.
Al-Qaeda.
They tried to do it in 93. They tried to do it in all those attacks on us throughout the world, throughout the 90s and early
2000s. I can't believe how much smoke this guy is blowing. Even our FBI admitted last June that it had no hard evidence connecting Osama bin Laden to the events of 9/11. Bin Laden denied he had anything to do with it. He did explain why he was upset with our having military forces in Saudi Arabia, the home of Mecca and Medina, the two most sacred sites in all of Islam, and why he was unhappy with the U.S. for taking such a lopsided approach toward the Arab-Israeli event. But Sherman's not up to speed if he doesn't understand all the evidence that these hijackers were a creation of the overactive imagination of the government apologists, especially Philip Zelikow,
Dr.
who
Fetzer,
was the executive director of the 9/11 Commission Report, is not a scientist, not an historian, but an expert in the creation and manipulation of public myths.
Let me stop you guys there.
Yeah, sorry.
I want to do another segment with you guys, but we have to hold on. One thing that amazes me, just for Hot Wings and Zane, and one of the reasons I'm so fascinated by all of this, is because here you have two educated men.
Yeah.
Both smarter than us, no question. Looking at the same thing, same date in history.
Okay, my wife has said, I'm not allowed to yell and scream. And this is what I always used to do at the radio. I mean, I've stopped old mate there, Fetzer, and I don't know who the guy is in between. But she says, don't talk in that tone of voice. Okay, so I'll talk in this tone of voice. I'll talk calmly and concisely. I think Michael Germa is a cunt, and I think James Fetzer, Dr. James Fetzer, is a cunt. So, I mean, that's quite calm and concise, and I think that's my opinion, and they can sue my fucking ass if there's a problem. All right, back to them.
And talk about, you know, to each person, it's black and white. And that's one of the things that fascinates me. Dr. Michael Shermer, editor-in-chief, Skeptic Magazine, can you hold on for another segment?
Yep.
Dr. Fetzer, same question for you.
Yes.
All right.
All right.
Hold on. We'll take a break. It is the Free Beer and Hot Wings Show. Let us welcome back Dr. Michael Shermer, editor-in-chief of Skeptic Magazine. You can check it out. Skeptic.com is latest book, Why Darwin Matters, The Case Against Intelligent Design by Michael Shermer. Can be purchased at Skeptic.com. He is debunking, at least that is his point, debunking the 9/11 conspiracy theories. Dr. Fetzer would say it's not a conspiracy theory. Dr. James Fetzer, distinguished McKnight University professor emeritus, University of Minnesota Duluth, retired now, right, Doc?
Yes, I am.
How's that going for you?
After 35 years of teaching logic, critical thinking, and scientific reasoning.
You got to relax, man. Go fishing or something.
Dr. Fetzer's latest book, Render Under Darwin, is available at Amazon.com. It's funny that you guys have that common ground, and then after that, it's nothing. building. We talked in the first segment about the World Trade Centers, and we'll probably go back to World Trade Center 7 because that.
If you want the real truth, the God's honest truth, you're not going to get it from Betza or Shermer. The real truth is going to come maybe on audio chat on fakeologist.com. Audio chat, fakeologist.com. Don't forget, this is Shermer and Fetzer carrying on like dickheads in 2009. We're living, what's the date today? The date today is what? It is, where are we? We're the 24th of August, 2015. Let's listen to some more of these clowns.
To me is where what would be called the conspiracy theorist could make, that's where their argument seems to hold the most steam. Let us go over to the Pentagon.
Joe, let me just mention one addition in relation to what Michael said recently, which is this. Just to substantiate my suggestion that these so-called hijacker terrorists may be a figment of the fertile imagination of the government in concocting its myth, five, six, or seven of these guys have turned up alive and well and living in the Middle East. David Ray Griffin, in his book, The 9/11 Commission Report, Omissions and Distortions, makes that as his very first point. In addition, the passenger manifests that were released by CNN on 9/11 show no names of any hijacker. Not only that, they show no names of even any Arab person. So that's quite stunning. And the claim that might be made that, well, he left off the hijacker's name, they would have had no way of knowing who the hijackers were or were not.
Dr. Shermer, that is one of the claims I noticed on the History Channel special about the some of the hijackers being alive and well in the Middle East and then also about the manifest. What is the response to that?
Yeah, well, the response is that they're not. They're dead. That the names to us seem unusual and complex, but they're along the lines of John Smith. And so, yeah, of course you could find somebody by that same name living somewhere in the Middle East, but the popular mechanics people that did a thorough investigation of this tracked down all those names. They're gone. They're not alive somewhere. They're dead.
Popular mechanics, was a travesty. There was a hostile takeover of Popular Mechanics in order to put in place the people who had run these apologies for the government. It's really disgusting. James Meigs, for example, the editor in chief, his background is not in science or even history. He's the former editor of Video Review and Entertainment.
What are these cunts? What are these two cunts arguing about? I'm sorry, it's the C word, but what are they arguing about? They're not arguing about anything at all. They're just going, blah, 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 blah. Because Shermer and bloody Fetzer are in on it. Yeah, they're in on it. They're paid liars. Now, I'm sorry if I won't put this to air, but Michael Shermer, PhD, look, like, this guy has got a PhD, and they're all called doctors. These guys are paid lying scumbags. I could be given a doctorate. Maybe I'll be given a doctorate in fakeology by Aberetto. Yeah, because, like, seriously, this is nothing to do. This is my opinion. I think these guys are paid lying scumbags. Okay, so I've got the opportunity now to stop the thing. I'm saying that no planes hit the buildings, and this is all from Simon Shack. And Simon Shack and his beautiful film called September Clues. But you've got these two fucking idiots doing absolutely fucking with people's minds. If fuck with mine, I wake up.
Weekly, David Colburn, who was his assistant, who was frequently featured in this recent History Channel attack on 9/11, turns out to be the former editorial assistant for National Geographic Traveler. I would think that Michael Shermer would say his experts would get more care.
They didn't present themselves as experts. They simply interviewed experts. What difference does it make what they did before?
Yeah.
I mean, anybody can talk to the experts. You can have them on the show here.
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're not experts.
That's what we're doing.
And so to the Pentagon, I mean, what's your explanation for the fact there's a piece of an American Airlines plane sitting right there on the lawn, and hundreds of people said, yeah, it was an American Airlines plane. We could see.
Well, I already addressed the fact that a plane may have, if the pilots for 9/11 truth study of the data, flight data recorder data is correct, it had a different approach, a different attitude, and a different altitude, that it actually may have flown over the building if the flight data information given to them by the NTSB under the Freedom of Information Act.
But where is that plane then?
Flown over. Now, as far as if you look at photographs immediately when you
but
got
James,
these
where is
green
that plane?
Fire engines.
Dr. Fetzer, can you answer that question? If that plane flew over the Pentagon, we'll get to what hit the Pentagon, but where is that plane now?
Well, actually, Flight 77 goes off of the radar screen in the Kentucky-Ohio border. There's no radar record of that plane coming back to Washington, where another smaller plane appears to have been substituted.
So, yeah, I remember your claim earlier, last time we talked to you, you had said that. It had vanished somehow, and I'm sure you have an idea of how. And then,
well, I don't know. Maybe it went in the Ohio River, for all I know. But, I mean, there are a lot of oddities here, and I'll be glad to address them. But let me make a point now about the debris.
Wait, the Ohio River? Not one person would see that?
May I make a point about the debris?
Well, let us ask. I think that's worth mentioning, because if it did, where there'd have to be.
If you want to hear the rest of this interview, you're going to have to go to fakeologist.com archives, because it is the most disgusting, disgraceful. I don't want to vomit on both of those two guys, and the moderator as well. Can I vomit on all of them? So Shermer, Dr. Michael Shermer, I want to vomit on you. Dr. Jim Fetzer, I want to vomit on you, and my wife wants to vomit on the moderator. She's coming in, and she's going to probably vomit on me. So you have been listening to the greatest website, in my opinion. It's called fakeologist.com, fakeologist.com. Not fakeologism. Not fakeology. What does Kham call it? Fakeologist.com. Thank you for being here. And we'll meet again, hopefully. 2-2-1. 2-2-1-2. One through the mic. Yes, this is 2-2-1-2. Okay, so if Amaretto does put this to air, I really do like this bit, Dr. Herman, how this comes through on the audio.
All right. Oh, out there. But I don't know if hanging on to it is the right thing to do. Does that mean I don't love the guy? Not at all. I'm the drunken uncle, he says. Anyway, fucking hell. I love this show, and this is always talking about spinning balls.
Have you ever thought what it's like to be wanderers in the fourth dimension? Have you? The exiles?
I'm not a human being. I'm a time lord. I walk in eternity.
Our lives are different to anybody else's.
Would it be unreasonable to ask you to let us have a look inside?
Take a look.
There we are. Well, what do you think?
Bigger on the inside.
To go on the run from your own people in a rackety old TARDIS.
Why not? After all, that's how it all started.
So, all of time and space, where do you want to start?
Hello there.
Doctor, you've been childish.
Well, of course I am. There's no point in being grown up if you can't be childish sometimes.
The ground beneath our feet is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour, and I can feel it.
You were never alone. All those bright and shining companions.
Till we meet again, sir.
Don't be too far away, will you? And if you do, come back and see us sometimes.
There's something you better understand about me. I am definitely.
courage isn't just a matter of not being frightened, you know. It's being afraid and doing what you have to do anyway.
He has saved your lives so many times and you never even knew he was there.
It all started out as a mild curiosity in the junkyard. Now it's turned out to be quite a great spirited adventure, don't you think?
Yes, the great spirit of adventure. Fakeologist.com.
Hey, everybody. This is Kay Ham. It's August 24th, 2015. And I thought I would come and share with y'all a little something that I learned recently. But first, I'd like to extend an invitation to, I think it's Babette. She comes in the audio chat as P-N-I-N. I think that's her. And I'm seeing you here all the time, and I feel so bad. I want to chat with you, but I guess you might not be in your computer or you're boycotting K. You know, that could be. But I see you here a lot, and I just want to extend a welcome to you, Babette, or P-N-N-I-N. And I hear Annette saying she talked to you. Maybe not her, but definitely O'Hallahan saying he talked to you. So you talk to people, but have you talked on air yet? I know you've talked to Ab, but have you talked on air yet? I think I hear a lot of good things about you, and I think people could benefit from listening to you talk, Babette. So I would encourage you to come online, and welcome to Fakeology, to fakeologist.com. Glad you're still hanging around here. It's much appreciated. What did Kay find? Well, I decided to look up the Social Security Death Index database. Social Security Death Index. I don't know if you recall, this is like the deal. This is it, folks. This is where fakeologists come to look and see if the media is telling the truth about if someone died or not. Did they die? Let's look in the SSDI, the Social Security Death Index. Let's see what we get from it. So we've been looking at that for quite a while. It's proved a lot of the victims, or the fake victims from 9/11, it proved they didn't die because they're not in there. Maybe like 30, I believe, 30 people who they have on the victims list that died in the Twin Towers plane. And I think they're all over the place. A couple are from planes, a couple are from towers, like that. So we look at that as gold. We're like, that's our data. That's good data. It's honest data. So we're thinking it's honest data because we go to it all the time. And I'm pretty sure it's accurate. You know, maybe those 30 people could actually, a couple of the victims were actually like old people. I was talking with Hoy about it when I was in Italy. And I was asking him about the victim lists. And he said, one guy for sure is using the exact same identity of a guy that's 80 years old. Same job, same everything, not related. Is that possible? I don't think so. So the Social Security Death Index is where we're going to get all the information. Now, they were trying to put a hitch in our giddy up because a couple of, was it a year ago maybe or two, it came out in the news that they're going to make a 2-year waiting list before they officially have to put someone in the Social Security Death Index, or it was like a 2-year waiting list before you could look someone up. Let's take a look at that. 2-year waiting list, Social Security Death Index, SSDI. No, how long? Social Security disability, if you get approved, you also get Medicare. No, so we don't want SSDI. Oh, let me just write it out. Social Security Death Index. What does it have? Arkansas, Tennessee, 2015. Free. Well, what I ran across, I'm not looking at that restriction. Maybe I'll put the word restriction. Search online, deathindexes.com. SSD access now limited. Let's see what that says. because they were scaring us, all us researchers were like, oh, no, you don't restrict our access to SSDI. How dare you? But they put that out there, and we believed it. But I never went back to check the restrictions about SSDI, if it was real or not. So this article, 2013, December 30th. Wow, the end of 2013. Budget bill bans public access for 3 years. That's it, 3 years, budget bill. And I know they were proposing the budget bill, but I never knew if the budget bill passed. So I'm going to read this article, budget bill, SSDI access now limited, posted December 30th, 2013 by Judy Russell, whoever that is. The Legal Genealogist, that's this website, thelegalgenealogist.com. Yes, the budget bill was signed into law. Oh, no, there wasn't any Christmas miracle. Yes, the language that eliminates public access to the Social Security Death Master File. So that's what the government calls it, Social Security Death Master File, also known as a Social Security Death Index, SSDI, for 3 calendar years after an individual's death was in the budget bill when it was signed. No, nobody crossed out the language exempting the SSDI information from the Federal Freedom of Information Act, FOIA. The budget was signed into law on Thursday of last week, December 26, 2013. It includes that drafted closure of the SSDI and the exemption of the SSDI information from FOIA sold to Congress on the flimsiest of threads as a purported revenue-enhancing measure. The argument was that it would save up to $60 billion in fraud by preventing identity theft and the filing of false tax returns. And it won't, is the author's comment there. That it would raise up to $500 million in new revenue by requiring those who do get access to the information to pay for a certification program in order to get that information. Oh, well, look at that. Look at all the money. Look at all the money being passed around and talked about. So if you're one of them fakeologists that says money doesn't matter, look at this right here, look at this right here. We got a bunch of money. And it could also have been an excuse, a rationalization for just shutting us researchers down. But nevertheless, it's talking about money. Government wants to raise money. It's a money hog. It's a money whore. Your government's a money whore, sucking in all that money every chance it gets. And here's another chance that if you want access to the SSDI or the Social Security Death Index, you got to pay money for a certification program before they give it to you. And then you got to pay them to give it to you. You see, it's additional revenue. Let's finish this article. So where does that leave us? Here on what we can all hope is the last bad news of 2013. That's right. It was the Christmas of 2013. I remember it well. I was researching the hell out of Sandy Hook. Been about a year since Sandy Hook, researching the hell out of it. And then this showed up, this restriction on all that gold information we were getting. I couldn't believe it. I was like, they're on to us. They know what's going on. They're on to us. All right, here's the rest of the article. Here's the big immediate impact, and it's from the fact that the FOIA exemption took effect the minute the bill was signed. Genealogists should not, I repeat, we should not order SS-5 forms, request for issuance of a Social Security number for anyone who has died in the last 3 years. The FOIA exemption means that all requests for information on the name, Social Security account, and number, date of birth, and date of death of deceased individuals maintained by the Commissioner of Social Security of people who've died in 3 calendar years before the request will be denied. So there's no sense in wasting our time and money sending intensive requests for SS-5s only recently deceased relatives. The second big effect will be to stop reporting new deaths on the SSDI, and while the law says it won't take effect for 90 days from the signing of the law, which is March 26, 2014, it is unlikely that any updated version of the SSDI will be available from now until 3 calendar years have passed from the date of any individual's death. As of today, which is the date of this article, December 30th, 2013, existing SSDI data that's online is remaining online. No online service provider has indicated any intention of pulling any information that's already available, but new information won't be available for some time. Sigh. Here's to a happier new year, we hope. Huh. So that was December 2013-14. That's 2.5 years ago. So why did I bring up the Social Security Death Index? Well, what I found out, I just thought was a little interesting. And it's good to update, you know, what's going on with this information anyway. So I'm looking up the Social Security Death Index, and, well, who makes that? The Social Security agent. But the Department of Social Security does not own the Social Security Death Index. It is owned by the United States Department of Commerce. All data, and it's the under the provisions of the National Technical Information Act of 1988, which is now the NTIS, the National Technical Information Service, the NTIS, is authorized to establish and maintain a permanent repository of non-classified scientific, technical, engineering information data, cooperate and coordinate its operations with other government scientific, technical, and engineering information programs, and implement new methods or media for the dissemination of scientific, technical, and engineering information, including producing and disseminating information products in electronic format, and to enter into agreements necessary for the conduct of its business. So just let me reiterate what they're saying there. They're saying in 1988 they passed into law the existence of the National Technical Information Service, which now, since 1988 forward, every government agency sends its non-classified data to the NTIS. So they hold your Social Security death index, they hold your taxes, they hold all the information your government keeps on you. And not only that, do they hold all this information your government keeps on you, they disseminate it as products, as electronic format. They're saying it right here. The government, people, is selling your information, disseminating your information as products in the electronic format, and to enter into arrangements. Okay, so now they have it and they're selling it, and they're also making deals with people to sell your information to them, necessary for the conduct of its business, into arrangements necessary. You know what? They might use the excuse that it's for business and it's necessary, but in reality, Ancestry.com is in an agreement with the NTIS for the Social Security Death Master File information, and they're getting it. So it's necessary for them to do business. They need that information. So if you look at it that way, anyone who wants to profit off your information can do it if you pay the government for it. National Technical Information Service has been collecting data from all departments of your government since 1988 under the provisions of the National Technical Information Act of 1988. I just thought that was interesting. I didn't know they were the people who were in charge of all this information. So the Social Security Department, once they give you that Social Security card, and once they take your taxes, they're done. All that information they keep on you goes straight to NTIS, who then packages it up and sells it to the highest bidder. More the lowest, probably. They're just sell it to anybody. Now, if we know that 1988 brought us NTIS, the National Technical Information Service, which houses the Social Security Death Index and everything else your government keeps on you. Now think about Obamacare. What does Obamacare have to do with the National Technical Information Service? Now, I haven't read this anywhere. This is me supposing. I should probably call Adam Curry and say, hey, Adam, I figured out in part what Obamacare's for. Granted, people of all income levels need health insurance. I'm a firm believer in that. It's quality of life. How can I have a good life if my neighbor is suffering? I can't. So people have to have their basic needs met. So if it wasn't Obamacare, it'd be something. There you go. But let's walk a little further into Obamacare for just a minute. Part of Obamacare is the fact that everything should be online. Everything should be electronic. That was the biggie of Obamacare. So all your doctor's offices, I remember the switch. My personal family physician, he retired. He's like, I'm not doing it. I don't have the resources in my small practice to go ahead and give, you know, to set up this new online system, to hire people, to train people. It's just, he's only going to be practicing a year or two. So he said, you know what? No, thank you. I'm not going to do that. Then he changed his mind, right? Then he started it. He did, actually. But then he, afterwards, he was like, I don't like this anymore. And he retired. But part of Obamacare is electronic information about your health. All your health records should be online. Every single thing about you, that hernia you got the other day, that yeast infection, that sexually transmitted disease you picked up in Mexico, all online. All online. Your habits and your illnesses, all online. And what does that mean? You see the benefit to certain parties when you get electronic data online? It already says here, the National Technical Information Service will take all electronic information, any information that's in an electronic format, if it's there, they're selling it. They're selling it to the highest or lowest bidder. So I'm thinking part of Obamacare was to earn a whole bunch of money for the National Technical Information Service. What are they doing with all that money that comes their way? Because they're selling all your data. Think of all the people who they're like online Google. Okay, he goes to Mexico. She goes to Mexico. They're all picking up these sexually transmitted diseases. No, I'm just thinking like the really bad cities. Not nice Mexico. I know lots of families that live in beautiful Mexico. But I mean like touristy places. We got a couple grungy ones south of the border. Those places I'm talking about. So then they're like, okay, so if you purchase a ticket to Mexico, I'm already going to give you an ad for medicine for sexually transmitted disease. See how that works? Something like, there's a lot of different ways these work, but that could be one way if they know your purchasing habits. I just wanted to share that. National Technical Information Service houses all the Social Security Death Index information. It houses all the whatever information that's non-classified, and if you're a person, you don't have any classified information unless you work for the government. It's all there. They're taking it all. They're the repository, permanent, to maintain a permanent repository for scientific, technical, engineering information, which includes, it's funny they don't say it here in this wiki, but when I went to Social Security Death Index, it said the National Technical Information Service houses all that data. And they're selling it. They're housing it and they're selling it. Let's read that one more time. Under the provisions of the National Technical Information Act of 1988, NTIS is authorized to establish and maintain a permanent repository of non-classified scientific, technical, and engineering information, cooperate and coordinate its operations with other government scientific, technical, and engineering information programs, and implement new methods or media for the dissemination of scientific, technical, and engineering information, including producing and disseminating information products in electronic format to enter into arrangements necessary for the conduct of its business. NTIS serves the United States as a central repository for government-funded scientific, technical, engineering, and business-related information to assure business, libraries, academia, and the public timely access to approximately 2.5 million publications covering over 350 subject areas. The stated aim of NTIS is to support the Department of Commerce, its mission to promote the nation's economic growth by providing access to information that stimulates innovation and discovery. Well, look at that. It's a lot more, isn't it, than I just said. It's a whole lot more. This is giant. It's to support the Department of Commerce's mission to promote. So you think the Department of Commerce. Sounds like these two are pretty big players here in this information game. Hey, kitty. Wanted to share that with y'all, that your Social Security Death Index information. Maybe I should look up someone who died recently and see if I can find them. I'll have to do that, see if I can do it or not. Or is this article that I read earlier, Social Security Death Index access now limited, is it still limited? I'll have to check that. I won't do that online right now, but maybe I'll check that and see. Your information, my friends, is for sale. It's for sale. A lot of people making a lot of big money on it. Your information, including Obamacare. Why do you think it got passed? I'm thinking because a lot of people knew they were going to benefit from this orgy of information about to come out. Yeah, I think Obamacare has just made an orgy of information for sale from the NTIS, the National Technical Information Service. And now you know. All right, let's read now the whole article on Wikipedia about the National Technical Information Service so we can know just a little bit more about who holds all our data. This is the group that holds all your information from the government. Now, I don't know about those Utah facilities. I don't know what they do. But here is a government-admitted organization that is tasked with holding and selling your data. So let's read about the National Technical Information Service. The National Technical Information Service, NTIS, is an agency within the United States Department of Commerce. The primary mission of NTIS is to collect and organize scientific, technical, engineering, and business information generated by the U.S. government-sponsored research and development for private industry, government, academia, and the public. The systems, equipment, financial structure, and specialized staff skills that NTIS maintains to undertake its primary mission allow it to provide assistance to other agencies requiring such specialized resources. I'm going to stop here. What needs my information? I wonder. I would like to see what their classification of information is. It would be cool to have access to government-sponsored research. That would be sweet. I would love that. If that's for private industry, government, academia, and the public. It says maybe I can research the database, see what's going on there. Because I know back in the 1950s at Rochester University, at New York, Rochester. I don't know if that's named Rochester. It's the name of the University of Rochester, something like that. I have to research that. They did fluoride gas experiments on beagles, and they knew exactly how much fluoride gas would kill a beagle. So they kept giving them different doses until they died. So they already knew fluoride was highly toxic, highly poisonous, even before they put fluoride in your toothpaste. This was a known thing, not a secret. in the industry at all, they knew exactly what fluoride gas did to individuals. That's one of the thinkings behind microwave popcorn, by the way. Side note, sidebar, is that it has the Teflon, which is fluoride, basically covering the inside. It's the non-stick part of it. But when you heat that up, you heat that Teflon up, you're really just making yourself a whole bunch of fluoride gas. Same as killed them beagles in 1950. See? That's the idea. Anyway, they knew that way before they did any, way before they put fluoride in your water, before the dentist started using it, before it's in, they knew how toxic it was and how deadly. I'm just saying, that's a government study I'd like to see more of. What they got there, I'd like to have access to that. So maybe I will spend some time researching the National Technical Information Service. Let's finish reading the wiki. Under the provisions of the National Technical Information Act of 1988, NTIS is authorized to establish and maintain a permanent repository of non-classified scientific, technical, and engineering information, cooperate and coordinate its efforts with other government scientific, technical, and engineering information programs, and implement new methods or media for the dissemination of scientific, technical, engineering information, including producing and disseminating information products in electronic format to enter into arrangements necessary for the conduct of its business. I wonder how hard it would be, sidebar, I wonder how hard it would be to get fake information into this system. All right, let's continue. NTIS serves the United States as a central repository for the government-funded scientific, technical, engineering, and business-related information to assure businesses, libraries, academia, and the public timely access to approximately 2.5 million publications covering over 350 subject areas. The stated aim of NTIS is to support the Department of Commerce mission to promote the nation's economic growth by providing access to information that stimulates innovation and discovery. Public Law 102-245, Section 108, American Technology Preeminence Act of 1991. Oh, we got more stuff. More acts grabbing data. Grabbing your data. Making a lot of money off your data. Obama Healthcare. Making tons of money off your electronic data. Once it gets in electronic format, boom, cheap and easy. Send it on down the road, government's making money off it, and you are none the wiser, my friend. Wow, that's how it's really going down. Oh, there's more. Scope. Let's just go ahead and read this all so we can understand. Who are these people taking all our data and selling it to other people? Scope. Containing over 2.5 million bibliographic records, the NTIS content collection is a significant resource for accessing the latest research sponsored by the United States and select foreign governments. Okay, I'm going to stop right there. See if you hear through this article, see if you hear me say the word Social Security Death Index, because I have a feeling they're not going to mention it in this article, like it's some sort of secret or something, so people don't get all worried about their information of their dead relatives getting sold. The collection represents the technical results of billions of dollars of U.S. government allocates, the technical results of billions of dollars U.S. government allocates for scientific research. Oh, so they're saying if the government gives money for the research, the research data should then back up NTIS. Sounds like what they're saying. The contents of the collection include research reports, computer products, software, and more. The complete electronic file dates back to 1964. On average, NTIS has added over 30,000 new records per year to the collection over the past 10 years. Most records include metadata. Metadata. What's metadata? It also contains a comprehensive collection of nuclear research, beginning with the Manhattan Project. They're highlighted in blue in case you want a link there. And the latest government-sponsored research. NTIS covers a wide spectrum of subject areas with 39 major subject categories and 375 subcategories. Nuclear research, Manhattan Project. You know that question I asked earlier? I wonder how hard is it to get fake data? Probably not too hard. All right, the next section is operations. NTIS operations include the acquisition and archiving of we're looking at the government arm organization. What would we call that? Agency. We're looking at a government agency called the NTIS, and it houses all your data, all government data, all government research data. Any type of data to be had, is these guys are the keeper of it. Operations. NTIS operations include the acquisition and archiving in perpetuity of scientific and technical information. This information is disseminated to the public on a fee-based cost recovery model. NTIS also provides technical support solutions to other federal government agencies. These lines of business include shipping and fulfillment services, e-training services, federal energy data management, government web hosting, scanning, digitized, and electronic archive services. NTIS is currently working with the Social Security Administration, the National Science Foundation, Internal Revenue Service, and other federal agencies. It said it right there! Scanning, digitization! They're taking all your shit and storing it. Says it right there. They even say IRS. Boom. I had a feeling. I was right. All this information goes to NTIS. All your internal revenue, all national science, anything they ever studied, any study they ever did, is all collected in this one spot. Interesting. Initiatives. Oh, they keep changing, huh? In 2008, let's see what happened to the NTIS. In 2008, NTIS recognized the need to provide subscription-based access to the collection using an online platform. Look at that. They're like, people need to get in to our big, giant repository. You know, I always think of JFK when I hear the word repository. I think the book Repository. I always think that. Let's get back. Online subscription-based. I would do that to have access to some of this stuff. I would pay some money. So in 2008, they recognized the need. In April 2009, the National Technical Reports Library was introduced, which offered convenient and cost-effective access to the collection to subscribers worldwide. Ooh, National Technical Reports Library. Open link, a new tab. I'll get to you in a minute. Building upon the success of NTRL in early 2012, okay, stuff keeps changing at this NTIS place, NTIS introduced a beta release of the new NTRL repository version 3.0, which uses the open source platform Fedora, which provides a flexible overarching repository solution. The new NTRL v3.0 is the first of several repositories planned for introduction under the new Federal Science Repository Services. So, well, why am I going to Ancestry.com? Why don't I go to the National Technical Reports Library and just get me up some data? The nation's top resource for government reports and information. I did not know this existed. This ain't on the internets when you look up stuff. All right. Well, let's keep going. Initiatives about the NTIS. This is a government agency that holds every single piece of data your government ever produced that's not classified. The FSRS, which is the new Federal Science Repository Service, they're the guys now. So what they did in 2009, they made a library. In 2012, they made a service to better sell your shit. Of your information. Okay. So now this service that is better able to sell your information was created to assist government agencies with the preservation of collections consisting of scientific and technical reports, images, videos, and other content which represents the mission of an agency or other institutions. The FSRS, pardon me just 1 minute. The FSRS provides supporting infrastructure long-term storage, security, interface design, content management, and operational expertise. An agency can utilize this entire service or select components, resulting in the design of an agency-specific repository that serves as a distinct gateway to its content. NTIS has been working with public.resource.org to digitize videos and post them on YouTube. What? Oh my God! What kind of shit are they putting out there that's not true that we thought was true? That now they're just, it never existed in the past. Now they made it exist. Or is it actual stuff like those Werner von Braun videos where he's talking about why rockets work in space? Because they really did that shit. And it's ridiculous. Okay, publicresource.org. Open link in new tab. We'll get to you in a minute. Statutory authorities. NTIS, basic authority to operate a permanent clearinghouse of scientific and technical information, is codified in this law. This chapter also establishes NTIS's authority to charge fees for its products and services and to recover all costs through such fees to the extent feasible. It's codified in Chapter 23 of Title 15 of the U.S. Code 15 115-1157 through 1157. This authority was restated in the National Technical Information Act of 1988. This act gave NTIS the authority to enter into joint ventures and declared the clearinghouse to be a permanent federal function that could not be eliminated or privatized without congressional approval. Wow, that's a pretty big deal. What was going on in 1988 that we didn't know that? Let's go 1988 events. When you do that, you usually get like historical events for that year or on this day, and then they list all the stuff that was happening in 1988. I wonder. 1988, Ashland oil storage tank spills, $3.8 million. Margaret Thatcher becomes longest surviving British PM. That's no big deal. Jimmy the Greek Snyder makes racist remarks about black athletes. Nah. NFL, Teddy and Alice closes at the Minskoff Theater. Mike Tyson, ooh. TKO's Larry Holmes. That's a biggie. That was fun. January 22nd. I don't see a lot of big deal. VP George Bush and Dan Rather clash on CBS Evening News. So these guys are duking it out. Meanwhile, all the information about you is being taken by your government, stored in this thing, and sold to the highest bidder. All right. The Act was amended by the American Technology Preeminence Act of 1992. 1. Required all costs associated with bibliographic control to be recovered by fees. 2. Required agencies to make copies of their scientific and technical reports available to NTIS. And 3. Directed NTIS to focus on developing new electronic methods and media for disseminating information. Another statute having a profound impact on NTIS is the Commerce, Justice, State Appropriations Act for the 1993, which established NTIS revolving funds and gave it the authority to use what fund without further approval by Congress. That fund, NTIS revolving funds. So they get new funds every year, but they still have to charge and recover how much it cost. Got a bunch of data sitting in there. How much does that cost? Keep that in there. No more approval of Congress. They can do what they will. In addition, the new code authorizes NTIS to accept payments in advance for services to be provided to other agencies. I wonder if these guys are located in Utah. That's what I'm thinking. This is a pretty big deal right here. Wow. Deputy Secretary of Commerce. Agencies under the United States Department of Commerce. Okay, so we got, where is that headquartered? Herbert Hoover Building. So the Department of Commerce is in the Herbert Hoover Building. Wow, look at that. Where else? Oh, look at this. I didn't know that. Under the Department of Commerce is the Economic Development Administration, the Bureau of Industry and Security, Bureau of Economic Analysis, the Census Bureau, that's under the Department of Commerce, International Trade Association, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, that's under the Department of Commerce. I did not know that. National Institute of Standards and Technology, the Patent and Trade Office, all under the Department of Commerce. There you go. There you go, folks. NTIS, they're the ones that are holding all your data, all your health data, all your tax data, all your Social Security data, all your income data, all your whatever you use the government for, your driver's license data, your passport data. They got it. They're housing it. NTIS. They're the folks who hold on to the information. And now you know. Hello, everyone. This is Still Kay. And I had just finished talking about the NTIS, which is the repository for every single piece of data that the government has on you, has on corporations, has on banks, has on universities, all scientific studies. They're kept at this one spot, the National Technical Information Service. So I was talking about that. Then there was a few links that brought me other places. One was public.resource.org. Public.resource.org. So I'm going here. This is a nonprofit corporation dedicated to publishing and sharing public domain materials in the United States and internationally. It was founded by Carl Malamud and is based in Sebastopol, California. Public.resource.org takes particular interest in digitizing and making accessible the works of the United States federal government, which because of U.S. government licensing rules for its own work, are almost always in the public domain. Yes, we scan. That's there. The organization often advertised its work by saying, yes, we scan. Isn't that funny? Making fun of yes, we can. Yes, we scan. That's cool, though. I like to see information not lost. I like to see it kept somehow. The Yes, We Scan focus of autumn 2013 is an effort to digitize and publish every available set of safety standards for every government in the world. Wow, they've got lofty goals there. That's pretty lofty. All right. Who's Malamud? Carl Malamud. Open link in new tab. He is an American technologist, author, and a public domain advocate known for his foundation, public.resource.org. He founded Internet Multicasting Service. He's in the government, man, making money off the government. During his time with this group, he was responsible for developing the first internet radio station and putting the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission database online. Wow, look at that. He's the author of 8 books, including Exploring the Internet and A World's Fair. He was a visiting professor at MIT Media Lab. He's a former chairman of the Internet Software Consortium. He's also co-founder of Invisible Worlds, was a fellow at the Center for American Progress, was a board member of the nonprofit Mozilla Foundation. The state of Georgia has sued Malamud for providing the official code of Georgia annotated on his website, describing it as a form of terrorism. Georgia sells a version of the code through LexisNexis. Well, that will have to be looked at. This dude also works with the Smithsonian Networks. Wow, he's all into a bunch of stuff, getting internet government stuff online, and he's making a ton. His company's doing pretty good. All right, now let's say I want access. I want personal access to the government database. So far, because I've been asking people about this Social Security Death Index, where are you getting online at? How are you getting access to that? And they're always going through a third party, like Ancestry.com. So I thought, well, where is the actual government place you get it from? It has to be somewhere. Well, it's here at NTIS. But before I can get access to that, let's go, let's see, federal data products. So I'm at NTIS.org, and I'm clicking on, like, what products do they have also available? What do they sell, I guess, is the biggest thing we want to know. Federal data products. So federal data products, what's options are Federal Science Repository Services, subscription to data products, NTIS Bibliographic Database, other government-related databases, Drug Enforcement Administration, Death Master File, and MSDRG Grouper. Well, let's just click on that. What is that? Medicare Severity Diagnosis-Related Groups. Well, we don't want that. All right, Federal Data Products. Let's look at Death Master File. That's really what we want. Disclaimer. The products advertised on this website contain a Social Security Administration database extract. The SSA authorizes the use of this database as a death verification tool, but notes that the Death Master File, the DMF, may contain inaccuracies. Thus, SSA cannot guarantee the accuracy of the DMF. I guess you gotta say it three times, right? Otherwise, we're not listening. Therefore, the absence of a particular person on this file is not proof that the individual is alive. Further, in a rare instance, it is possible that the records of a person who is not deceased to be included erroneously in the DMF. So watch out. They're telling you you can have people who aren't dead in the file and people who are dead not in the file. Okay, I clicked OK. So now we're at how to get the DMF, into the DMF, the Death Master File. That's what I'm looking at. I'm at a government agency. Here's what I have to do. Let's see. It says, it's funny, is it time for you to recertify? Who are they talking to? This note is to remind those of you whose limited access Death Master File certification will expire next month or soon thereafter that in order to retain your access to the LADMF, the Limited Access Death Master File, under the current temporary certification program, you must, 1, pay $200 certification fee to this place. Where is it at? To, let's go back. I clicked it before. I'm trying to follow. Just ready, open link and new page. There we go. So I have to pay $200 if I want to look at the DMF, the Death Master File, to the National Technical Information Service. Okay, so they sent me to a web page, National Technical Information Service Limited Access Death Master File Subscriber Certification. So if I click on, there's only one option, $200 online, I add to cart. Let's see how far I can get before I have to pay. So I'm starting the process to look at the Death Master File on a limited basis, whatever that means. All right, so I'm waiting for that page to load. Let's move on. Number two, submit a certification application. Oh, so I have to pay the certification fee. Now I have to apply. All right, so let's apply. Let's see what kind of questions we have to apply. The Limited Access Death Master File Subscriber Certification Form. Okay, so this is what we have to fill out to look at the Death Master File. Number one, the undersigned hereby certifies that access to the NTIS Limited Access DMF, this is the Death Master File, is appropriate because the undersigned A, has I, a legitimate fraud prevention interest, or double I, a legitimate business purpose pursuant to a law, government rule, regulation, or fiduciary duty. B, has systems, facilities, and procedures in place to safeguard such information and experience in maintaining the confidentiality, security, and appropriate use of such information pursuant to the requirements similar to the requirements of the section blah 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 of the Internal Revenue Code of 1986. And C, agrees to satisfy such similar requirements. Basically, they're saying there's only two things, only two reasons you can get access to the Death Master file. One is because you think someone's using a dead person's name or fraud prevention. And two, you got a business that sells information. Isn't that crappy? If you're just a regular guy, you can't get information unless you make shit up. Fraud prevention. You have to say something like, my dad died and I think this jerk over here is using my dad's name. Or your business. It's okay if you're making money off it. If you just are like a researcher like we are, there's no click. I am epistemologist. I check factual data for history. No, it has to be a business. Look at that. We are off this checklist. If you choose business purpose, then you must also cite the law, cite the government rule, cite the regulation, and cite the fiduciary duty. All right, number three. The undersigned further certifies that with respect to the Death Master file of any deceased individual at any time during the 3-calendar-year period beginning on the date of the individual's death. So I'm going to stop here. This takes us back to that 2013 law that said you got to wait 3 years before you look up dead people. All right, so they're referencing that, which is received by the undersigned. The undersigned shall not. So, well, now hold up. The undersigned further certifies that with respect to the DMF of any deceased individual at any time during the 3-year calendar period beginning on the date of the individual's death, which is received by the undersigned, and undersigned shall not disclose any information containing the DMF with respect to any deceased individual. So it looks like it's saying if you're within that 3-year period, you can't tell anybody what if they give you information about it. To any person other than a person who meets the requirements of A, B, and C above, and they can't disclose information contained with respect to any deceased individual. So basically they're saying you can only share this information with someone who already knows the information. For further purposes other than legitimate fraud prevention interest or legitimate business purpose pursuant to the law, government rule, regulation, or fiduciary duty. I could make a fiduciary duty. I could say I have to pay this guy $500. Unless I give him information. So then, see, I got a fiduciary duty to give this guy information. I don't know. I'm trying to make sense of this. So basically, you're not allowed, if it's within the 3-year period, to talk about any dead people. Not allowed. However, if it's for a bank, of course, you know, banks are going to get their shit so they can get their information. But isn't that interesting? I think this relates directly to Sandy Hook and trying to prove shit's real or fake. We got to wait 3 years for that. This is supporting that. Let me read number three again. The undersigned further certifies that with respect to the Death Master file of any deceased individual at any time during that 3-year calendar period, beginning on the date of the individual's death, which is received by the undersigned, the undersigned shall not disclose any information contained on the Death Master file with respect to any deceased individual to any person other than a person who meets the requirements above. Disclose any information contained in the Death Master file with respect to any deceased individual to any person who uses the information for any purpose other than legitimate fraud prevention, interest, or a legitimate business purpose pursuant to a law, government rule, regulation, or fiduciary duty. Disclose any information contained in the Death Master file with respect to any deceased individual to any person who further discloses the information to any person other than a person who meets the requirement of each of the paragraphs above. Use any information contained in the Death Master file with respect to any deceased individual for any purpose other than a legitimate fraud prevention interest or a legitimate business purpose pursuant to a law, government rule, regulation, or fiduciary duty. They're telling you better not talk about it. Better not talk about who died unless 3 years has passed. Otherwise, what? I don't know what the what is yet. Number four. In making the certification in paragraph three, the undersigned states the following. A. The undersigned shall not disclose... Oh, they're still talking about disclosing information. The undersigned shall not disclose any information contained on the Death Master file with respect to any deceased individual at a time during the three calendar year period beginning on the date of the individual's death, which is received by the undersigned, or to any other person. A. So, in making certification, the undersigned states the following. Okay, so you have to choose A. What's B? The undersigned will disclose information contained on the Death Master file with respect to an individual during the three calendar year period beginning on the date of the individual's death, which is received by the undersigned to another person in the following manner. Okay, so now if you're going to break the three-year code, you got to say why. What's for disclosure to another person other than the certain? Okay, so you're going to break it in this way. Okay. So say I'm a bank. Yeah, I'm going to break it because I have to certify the will. Say you're a lawyer. You got to certify the will. Okay. I, the undersigned, shall ensue compliance by such other person with requirements of. And then I, the undersigned, shall ensure that such person shall be made aware of the penalty provision. Ah, penalties. So you got to say what you're going to do and how you're going to keep people quiet. All right. Tell them to shut the hell up. Don't you dare tell what's in that DMF if it's within that three-year period. Number five, the undersigned acknowledges that failure to comply. There we go. Now we're going to talk about what's going to happen if you blab. Okay, so I think this is cool because we're always saying, you know, why don't people tell? Why do people keep it a secret? Well, here's a place now, the Death Master file, where if I get into it, they're asking me, I got to keep some secrets. That's what they're asking me right here. What's the penalty if I don't keep them secrets? Number five, the undersigned acknowledges that failure to comply with the provisions of paragraph three may subject the undersigned to penalties $1,000 for each disclosure or up to a maximum of $250,000 in penalties per calendar year. What? So say you've been leaking stuff out for 3 years. They can charge you $750,000. The undersigned hereby consents to the performance by a third-party auditor of periodic and unscheduled audits of the undersigned to determine the compliance by the undersigned with the certifications made herein. Number seven, if the undersigned makes this certification on behalf of a corporation, company, association, firm, partnership, society, joint stock company, other private organizations, or state or local government departments or agencies, then the undersigned hereby represents and warrants that the undersigned is authorized to make the certification on behalf of and to bind such corporation, company, association, firm, partnership, society, joint stock company, other private organizations, or state or local government department or agency. Holy shit, it's like everyone but the public. Public, you don't need to know, but everybody else on earth can, but you dumbasses, nope. You're too dumb to know. Number eight. The undersigned hereby declares that all... My God, really? Really? Okay, I'm going to stop right here. I've done several Freedom of Information Acts in my city where I live. Been up there, done that. There's no secret shit like this. They say you can't tell people. They just want to get their money back. If they make a copy for you, they want you to pay them price of that copy. That's really all you sign saying I'll pay for whatever it's worth. There's not all this secret shit going on. What's going on, government, with your DMV? Why is it such a damn secret? And you can't say fraud because that's bullshit. In this day and age, fraud is a simple thing to prove. Simple. Go to your credit card company. I always get paid back. Always. When there's fraud on my card. Always. It's easy to prove. They're not fighting you for it. plus they're sketchy. Number 8. The undersigned hereby declares that all certifications and statements made herein of the undersigned's own knowledge are true, and that all certifications and statements made on information The undersigned hereby declares that all certifications and statements made herein of the undersigned's own knowledge are true, and that all certifications and statements made on information and belief are believed to be true. And further, that these certifications and statements were made with the knowledge that willful false statements and the like so made are punishable by fine or imprisonment or both. The undersigned hereby acknowledges that any willful false certification or statement made herein is punishable by fine or imprisonment of not more than 5 years or both. Well, what we got here, we got, I see an out already, and that all certifications and statements made on information and belief are believed to be true. Dude, I believed it to be true. I know the guy handed it to me in a dirty sack, but I believed it to be true, so I'm clean. I believed it, even though you caught us on tape telling each other that we're going to make a bunch of money off this and we're lying. I still believed his information to be true. Therefore, I believed mine. Look at that out. Get your lawyer out here to read this, see what he thinks. Number 9. The undersigned acknowledges that, if approved, their certification will be effective on the effective date indicated in the approval email from the NTIS and will expire 1 year thereafter on the expiration date indicated in that same email. Holy shit. Limited access. All right, so here's what we have to say. Authorized name. Well, I don't know what an authorized name is yet. How do we get authorized? Are we assuming we're authorized before we fill this out? I'm going to say business. I'm going to make a damn business. Because if I say fraud prevention, I'll be lying. So if I do business, making certification of the paragraph states the following. Yeah, I'm not sure what they mean by authorized name. But anyway, authorized signature. Name of partnership, corporation, or public or private organization. We'll call it Facts for All. K's Facts for All. That's the name of my company. My address, Washington State. My phone number. Death Master File subscription number. Oh, I don't know what that is. NTIS invoice order confirmation number for processing fee. I guess I need to pay my $200 first. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's the deal. Just pay your $200 and shut the fuck up. That's how do you get access to the Death Master File? Pay $200 and shut the fuck up. All right. Sign and okay, so we, step one, pay the $200. Step two, all that certification process I told you, I just read a bunch of it. Do that. And step three, sign an amendment to your agreement. All right. So your agreement may be renewed on an annual basis for up to 5 years by a written amendment. Or I could do the license agreement signed by you contingent upon your executing the current version of the subscriber certification form annually and fulfilling any and all other requirements set forth by... Okay, let's do what sounds more complicated just to see how government works. Oh, it's a Word doc they sent me. Just downloaded itself. This is what Ancestry.com had to do, folks. This is what they, right now, what I'm telling you, this is what they had to do to get their information on the death mat. Well, that's what they have to do today. I don't know what they did initially. All right, so the last thing I have to do, besides pay my two, so it's pay $200, fill out that one form, and then fill out the second form. So the second form, limited access Death Master File license agreement for use and resale. This amendment extends the term of the limited access Death Master File non-federal subscriber agreement between NTIS and me. Facts for fun. I already forgot my name. By 1 year from its last date of expiration. Oh, so it extends it by a year. Look at that. They just added that on. People didn't want the 1 year. Now this makes it 2 year. Basically, you're just signing your name. You're done. It's giving your subscription number, certification, invoice, confirmation number. That's basically when you pay your $200. That's what you get. Wow. So you have to do three things. If you want the Death Master file, pay $200, submit an application, which just says what you plan to do with it, and then three, submit another application, which extends the first application by 1 year. There you go. Now you can have access to the Death Master file too, but basically they're telling you if you happen to get information that's less than 3 years old, you better not tell people. And if you do, you got to tell them they can't tell people. It's a secret. It's all shit a secret. There you go. I just wanted to do that. Come on. TeamSpeak. And just finish that up for you, what I found. I thought it was kind of interesting. What's going on with the Death Master file? People making big money off it. And it's funny. It's like they're trying to balance their need to make money and their need to keep secrets. That's really what that document I read said to me, that application. They were trying to balance their need to keep secrets versus their need to make money on information. And I think that's pretty much what we read there, right? They're like, keep this shit a secret because we don't want to let the cat out of the bag about Sandy Hook, but God, we want to make money off it too. So God, okay, they're really just saying, take our information, but dude, don't tell anybody. Because we got shit going down. We don't want it to get out. But make money off it. Just don't tell anybody. I don't know. That'd be hard for me. I'd want to tell really bad. Unless I was making an obscene amount of money. Then maybe not. Maybe not. All right. This has been Kay. It's August 24th, 2015. And now you know.
Hello. I'm Delacroix. And you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.